Hello and good morning, everyone. It's Dr. Sarah Gottfried. I wanted to start today with the Dalai Lama. Felt like a good place to start. I've been listening quite a bit to one of his mantras this weekend in preparation for today. And as many of you know, the Dalai Lama says that the purpose of life is happiness. Happiness, which can be achieved through training the mind. He goes on to say that happiness is determined more by the state of one's mind than by one's external circumstances, at least once one's basic survival needs are met. And I found that the Dalai Lama's words also apply to energy management and to adrenal health. And I want to dial that in a little further for you today. Today is Monday. I've got a slide up for those of you who are on the webcast. It's Monday, but it's okay. We are on a mission to make every day feel like a Friday, including Monday. Monday is the fateful day when many women tend to start a diet. We begin dieting anew, and this is one of those things that I want to change up. I really feel like diets don't work. We've got quite a bit of proof supporting that. 98% of diets fail. And they tend to work just in the short term until some new sabotage comes along. What I believe is a better alternative is a food plan, which is related to mental retraining, just like the Dalai Lama was describing. If you want to know about my food plan, which is also adrenally supportive, ding, 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 I've got that listed on my website at sarahgottfriedmd.com. And food is one of those reactive, emotional, and psychic loops that we tend to get trapped in. I'm reading a book right now by Daniel Siegel. Many of you know Dr. Siegel. He's a professor of psychiatry at Stanford, and he speaks to this whole issue of reactive, emotional loops. He speaks to this in his work on MindSight. And I think it's important to talk this through for a moment because reactive emotional loops are really at the heart of burned out adrenals. So here's how he defines MindSight. Quote, MindSight is a kind of focused attention that allows us to see the internal workings of our own minds. It helps us to be aware of our mental processes without being swept away by them, enables us to get ourselves off the autopilot of imagined behaviors and habitual responses and moves us beyond the reactive emotional loops we all have a tendency to get trapped in. It lets us name and tame the emotions we are experiencing rather than be overwhelmed by them. End quote. Here's a roadmap for where we're going to go today. We're going to start, as always, with a jump start. I've got these jump starts for you every week so that you have 5 tips that you can use as a touchstone for making gradual change as you work through mission ignition. And I want to talk a bit today about the functional medicine matrix. This is the paradigm that I use as I think about adrenal health and how it fits into the general matrix of your body. We're also going to talk about some of the history on stress. I've mentioned already Dr. Walter Cannon, and I want to talk today about someone who followed in his footsteps named Hans Selye and some of the data that he put out into the national discourse, which then was later disproven. I'm going to talk a little bit more about testing and assessment of your adrenal function, including the cortisol to DHEA ratio. I'm also going to share with you some of my results, as well as supplements that are proven to make a difference. And just a reminder, I know many of you have heard me say this multiple times, but we have PDFs of all of your jump starts, as well as the PDFs that I refer to throughout the course, including some of my testing, and those are listed at sarahgottfriedmd.com/MIEPDFS. So that stands for Mission Ignition Energy PDFs. Okay? good. The reason why I have my results is because I can't share with you the results of my patients. So I like to kind of illustrate the story with my own results, which I'm happy to share. So I want to talk about happiness again for a moment. I'm reading Andy Weil's latest book, Spontaneous Happiness. And Andy, as you probably know, is the father of integrative medicine. He's a professor at the University of Arizona, where he founded the Arizona Center for Integrative Medicine. He believes that healing and happiness are an innate capacity. I believe this as well, an innate capacity, and that we need to question the prevalent habit of making our emotions, especially our positive emotions, dependent on external factors. He really believes in variety. He believes in variety in our emotional life and how we give and receive touch in our food and in our movement. I also completely agree with that. And he defines a term that I like a lot, which is this, emotional sea level. Not happiness, but rather contentment, calm acceptance, serenity. This is an emotional state that can be cultivated by a trained mind, similar to what the Dalai Lama was talking about, similar to what Daniel Siegel is talking about. It's an emotional state that is, I would say, the gift of aging, if you are open to it. And here in the United States, I feel like we've got this uniquely odd way of looking at acceptance and serenity. Many of us are trained to see it as more passive, but it needn't be passive at all. In fact, it's about surrender and letting go and the power in that. And I would say that the state of acceptance, contentment, and serenity may just be the best possible state for healing, for activating your innate resources, your innate healing power, the repair work that all of us need every night when we go to bed to optimally heal ourselves, including the cells of our adrenal glands. Andy recommends in his latest book several practices to cultivate the state of being, and I want to share some of them with you. One of them is what he calls the 4-7-8 breath, which I want to teach to you very briefly right now. And perhaps you could practice this as we go through the rest of the presentation this morning. So it's pretty simple. The idea is that you inhale for a count of four, you hold your inhale for a count of seven, and then you exhale for a count of eight. So let's just try that together right now, and I want you to try to do about four rounds of it over the next few minutes. So you inhale for a count of four, you hold the breath for a count of seven, and you exhale for a count of eight. So give that a try. Stick with that breath. It's a very calming breath, especially good for those of you who have anxiety, who have stressed adrenals. And the beauty of this breath is that you can do it while you're driving. You can do it while you're listening to me talk. You can do it when you're hanging out with your children and you're trying not to suffer or struggle. You can do it while we get into our week two jump start. So here are five tips, five practices I want to share with you. The first one is light at night. This is an official term, L-A-N. I want you this week to minimize the amount of light exposure that you have after sundown. This is where I want you to channel Abe Lincoln. You know how he used to study and read by candlelight? One of the best things you can do is to minimize how much artificial light you get after the sun goes down. Now, I live in the Berkeley Hills. The sun goes down, I don't know, maybe around 8 o'clock. And this is a great reminder for me to not be scrambling in front of my laptop answering every email after the sun goes down. One of the best things you can do is to light a candle as a visual reminder to minimize artificial light. Maybe choose a time for a curfew on your computer or your laptop. Some of the worst offenders in terms of light after sundown are clock radios in the bedroom. I want you to really clear out your bedroom, create a sanctuary so that you do not have any light exposure at night. This helps to minimize the amount of cortisol that you produce at night, which can disrupt sleep and make it harder to wind down. It also helps you to make as much melatonin as possible. And this helps you sleep restoratively, to have that full adrenal conversation that we've talked about every night. So one of the things we know when it comes to the matrix is that wear and tear is what happens during the day, led by cortisol. Your peak cortisol is usually within 30 to 60 minutes after you get up in the morning. And the nighttime is when all of the repair happens. So we want to set you up so that you get maximal repair. We don't want you just to have partial repair happening at night. So light at night, minimize light after sundown. We'll talk more as the weeks go on about sleep and how to optimize it. I've asked you already to consider looking into some of the different gizmos that are out there to help you with tracking your sleep. And I'd love it if you would share it on our Facebook page if you started to do that. I use a Zio. That's my favorite method. I also use a Lark. And I'm going to be announcing on the Facebook page a little later today who won the Lark. Who won the Lark from a call that I gave on April 17th. Second practice is to really do a survey for codependence. Now, this is related to overproviding, which I've been talking about for the last couple of weeks. And the question here is, are there places in your relationships where you do not have healthy boundaries, where you do not have clear and direct communication, where you are enabling bad behaviors? It's essential that you've got bodacious boundaries to support you, to help you with that adrenal conversation, with the ongoing adrenal repair that you need to accomplish your mission on this planet. And I just pulled out a few ideas here from a 12-step codependence program called CODA. These are some of the patterns that I tend to have. I don't have all the patterns of codependence, but these are some of the ones that resonate for me, and you can tell me if they resonate for you. So this is part of the self-evaluation that you can find at coda.org, coda.org. And these are some of the denial patterns that I tend to see in myself. So the idea is you would look at these statements and see if they're true for you. I'm just going to read off some of them. I have difficulty identifying what I'm feeling, yes or no. I minimize, alter, or deny how I truly feel. Perhaps you start to use should or must, some of those terms that we've talked about. I perceive myself as completely unselfish and dedicated to the well-being of others. I lack empathy for the feelings and needs of others. I label others with my negative traits. This is classic projection. I can take care of myself without any help from others. This is self-reliance, something I'm often guilty of. I mask my pain in various ways, such as anger, humor, or isolation. I express negativity or aggression in indirect and passive ways. I do not recognize the unavailability of those people to whom I am attracted. So this is just one little slice of codependent pie. I also wanted to offer up some of the affirmations that CODA talks about. I've got four of them listed here. Good things come my way. I hold each one close because I deserve it. I am grateful for all that I am. I am enough, and I have enough. My direction and path in life become clear to me through my higher power. Now, these are practices that I'm sharing with you. And I believe I've mentioned this before, I'm not a big fan of tips. I think tips are things that you do once and then you forget about them. I'm much more a fan of practices, things that you do over and over again and they become habitual. The third practice that I have for you this week is to cultivate protective factors, especially connection. Couple of thoughts here. You're going to hear later on in Mission Ignition Energy from a friend of mine named Lisa Byrne. Lisa Byrne, she's especially focused on helping depleted moms feel more vital again. And one of the things that she talks about, which I really love, is the idea that we used to have so many more protective factors, things that helped us prevent adrenal burnout. And there's fewer and fewer protective factors kind of built into the fabric of our lives these days. And so I want to get super conscious about bringing those protective factors back in, even if you have to pay for them. You know, maybe you barter or trade to get them into your life if finances are an issue. But I think it's really important that you spend as much time as you can dwelling in these protective factors. So let me give you a few examples here. The chairperson at the Stanford Department of Psychiatry had a great quote that was circulated widely. He said, "The best thing a man can do for his health is to be married to a woman. The best thing a woman can do for her health is to be with her girlfriends." So one protective factor is to be with your girlfriends, and this is essential. I know many of you are single moms, you're burning the candle at both ends, there's no time, no time, no time. And I have to say, as a mom with a husband who travels all the time and a book, final manuscript that was due a couple weeks ago, and I'm still in editing mode along with my full-time medical practice, I know what it's like to not have time, and yet it blows my mind how hanging out with other women increases my resilience, increases my stress resilience, raises my oxytocin level. So I really encourage you to cultivate protective factors. Cultivate protective factors. There's a number of them. So hanging out with other women who are nurturing is just one of them. Another is what I would call the sadhana of chopping vegetables. So I spend a lot of time going out to restaurants, but I can tell you when I prepare a meal and I chop vegetables, there's such a meditative quality to it. There's something about looking at the vegetables, cutting them, turning that into a slow meditative practice that is very protective for my matrix, for my adrenal glands. And I'd love to hear more about protective factors you can think of. I've just given you a few examples, but of course there are many, many, many. Number four, bowel function. So I know that many of you know this already, but there is an essential link between your gut and your adrenal function. We're going to be talking quite a bit with Ellen Heed this week about the connection between the two. Ideally, you should have 2 to 3 bowel movements per day, and you should also feel as though you are completely evacuating your rectum and the lower part of your descending colon. So that's the colon on the left-hand side of your belly. You can feel that right now. When you have a bowel movement, one of the key features of problems with cortisol, the main stress hormone related to adrenal function, is that it tends to make you not poop. It tends to make you constipated. And I find that one of the early signs of adrenal dysregulation is that many women rely on coffee in the morning to trigger a bowel movement. This is another woman sign of excessively stressed adrenal glands. So Ellen is going to share with us this week, starting on Wednesday, practices for healthy bowel function. I want you to really pay attention to that. One of my favorites is making sure that you're getting adequate sea salt in your diet. You know, a lot of people are salt phobic, and I find that one of the more common reasons for high blood pressure is actually that your cortisol is too high. Your cortisol is excessively high, and that's driving up your blood pressure. Of course, weight gain can also be associated with higher blood pressure. But only about 8% of the U.S. population is actually sensitive to salt in such a way that it causes your blood pressure to go up. Now, certainly processed food has way too much sodium. I'm talking about eating a whole food, nutrient-dense food plan where sea salt is something that you are consuming with every meal. The fifth practice is to assess your core strength, and I mean this pretty broadly. Your physical core strength, your emotional core strength, and your spiritual core strength. One of my suggestions for this week is to focus on core strengthening. So this can be in the form of adaptive exercise, such as I live in Berkeley. One of my favorite ways to exercise my core is to go to the daily method. There's a lot of different bar workouts around the world right now. The daily method is only one of them. But this new trend that we have in using bar exercise is very effective at core strengthening. Pilates, of course, is another way to do it. Yoga as well. But I think it's important to look at this very broadly, not just physically, but emotionally and spiritually. And if you have more questions about this, I'm happy to talk more about strengthening your core. There's a number of yoga practices that can do this, including kriyas, which I find to be very effective. So that's our jump start. I want to shift now to the Adrenals 101, how stress affects your body. And I've got a slide here for those that are on the webcast about what stress does to your body. It can cause chronic fatigue. It can be associated with headaches, with attention deficit disorder. I've mentioned that before, anxiety, irritability, anger, panic. It can deplete you of a lot of the feel-good brain chemicals. I think about excessive stress response as having a few different phases, kind of an early phase, a mid phase, and a late phase. And the later phases are the ones that are associated with depleting serotonin, dopamine, and some of the other neurotransmitters that are really key to you feeling like you've got a balanced mood. Excessive stress can also lead to teeth grinding, tension in the jaw. We talked about that last week and about how women especially tend to have more tension in the jaw than men. It can also increase your heart rate, can increase your blood pressure, as I mentioned. It can cause digestive issues, especially constipation, but some people have irritable bowel syndrome or a combination of constipation and diarrhea. That can also be part of the irritable bowel syndrome. Weight gain and obesity is another stress disorder, insulin resistance. We can talk about this if you have questions about it. It can also decrease sex drive. And what we want to do is to really understand what are the biological determinants of this. So I want to shift for just a moment to what I call new paradigm medicine. I don't feel like there's one term that really nails it better than any other, but some of the terms that are bantered about include functional medicine, integrative medicine, something that I call evidence-based integration, which is bringing together some of the ancient teachings into molecular biology and our latest thinking about cutting-edge science. So it's a way of bringing together alternative healing with conventional medicine, but using the paradigm of evidence. And one system I like a lot is functional medicine. I've got the matrix listed here. I know it's really hard to read all the terms that are on here, but this is a typical sheet that I use in my medical practice where I'm really bringing in all the different factors that relate to a patient's story. And we can just start on the left-hand side with some of the issues that lead to the narrative when I'm hearing the story of someone's adrenal fatigue, for instance. There are antecedents. These include predisposing factors, genetic and environmental issues. We know that there's a number of genetic issues that can be brought to bear on adrenal function. There's triggering events, activators, mediators, perpetuators, things that keep adrenal fatigue going. On the right-hand side is this really complex web. You know, one thing you can notice on the right-hand side is all of the arrows pointing to all of these different factors that are related to your physiology and function. And I'll just hit some of the highlights here. Assimilation is really important. That's starting at about 11 o'clock. That includes your digestion, how you absorb food, your gastrointestinal tract, and the microbes that you have there. You know, it's kind of amazing to know that if you look at the DNA in the body, 99% of the DNA in the body actually is bacterial. Very little of the DNA in our body, only about 1%, is human. At about 1 o'clock is defense and repair. This includes immune functioning, inflammation, infections, how your bacteria either defend you or work against you. We'll be talking more about that in a moment as we talk about cortisol and what is adrenal fatigue, what do the adrenals do. Next is energy. That's at about 3 o'clock, and this includes your mitochondrial function. We were talking a bit about this last week and about how energy is regulated in your body. Next up at about 5 o'clock is biotransformation and elimination. This is related to how you detoxify. How do you get exposed to toxins over the course of your day? Next at 6 o'clock is transport. This includes cardiovascular transport, how your blood gets circulated, lymphatic circulation. At about 7 o'clock is communication. This is really my focus, your neuroendocrine communication system. And then at 9 o'clock is your structural integrity. And I've talked a little bit about this. I was talking about your neck, how crucial it is to be attentive to your neck, not just for some of the hormonal tasks that happen in your throat. So thinking about the thyroid, for instance, and how it controls your metabolism and how cortisol can affect your thyroid, but also how tightness in the neck can cause issues with your thyroid function. It's really important to bring in the structural issue. And for those of you who are on the Facebook page, I posted yesterday a video of my favorite neck release, so you can check that out. And then at the bottom of the slide are some of the lifestyle factors that I think are really important. And these are some of the things that we're going to be hitting upon over the next few weeks. I've mentioned already sleep, relaxation, especially mental retraining, exercise and movement, nutrition and hydration, stress and resilience, relationships and networks. So this is one of those forms that I think is really important, and I would love it if you would fill this out. So I'm going to be posting this on your worksheet page today, and I want you to fill this out for you. Fill out the portions that really speak to you in terms of doing a current inventory for where you are with your matrix right now. So let's shift now to adrenal function. We had a lovely person on our Facebook page say, very honestly, I don't even really know what my adrenal glands do. Like, I really need to understand this. I think it's important. So I want to start first with the location of your adrenal glands. I've mentioned this already, but the idea is that you've got these beautiful kidneys in your back. Your kidneys filter your blood. They help you with regulating salt and water retention. They figure out whether you need to hang on to sodium or let it go in the urine. They determine how concentrated your urine should be. They try to hang on to protein so that you're not peeing the protein out. They do a lot of really important things. And on top of the kidneys are the adrenal glands. So you've got a right and a left adrenal gland. there's an inside and outside to the adrenal glands. We're not going to be talking about the structure so much, but I do think it's important to talk about how your adrenals are related to stress. So your adrenals are the glands of stress. They are endocrine glands that mostly release cortisol. We've talked about this. It's the main stress hormone. But they also make some other sex hormones that I think are important to mention, including pregnenolone, progesterone, DHEA, testosterone, and aldosterone. Your adrenals also make a couple of neurotransmitters, which are kind of like a fast-acting cortisol, and that includes epinephrine and norepinephrine. And if you want to know more about what those do, you can ask me to mention it on our Q&A this week. So we've got our Q&A this week on Thursday, and you can email questions to missionignition@sarahgottfriedmd.com, or you can also post them on Facebook, and I'm going to be answering them kind of first come, first served. Next slide is a little diagram showing how all of these different hormones relate to each other. And at the top of this schematic is cholesterol. The idea here is that cholesterol in your body is the precursor to the sex hormones in your body. Cholesterol gets made into pregnenolone. Pregnenolone is the main hormone of soothing. It's the mother hormone of all the other hormones in your body. Pregnenolone gets to be converted into one of two pathways, either the DHEA testosterone estrogen pathway, which is shown on the right, or pregnenolone gets made into progesterone and then cortisol. And the priority here, out of all of these different hormones, the one that trumps all else is cortisol. So you will make cortisol no matter what. And there's a process called pregnenolone steal that happens, where basically if you are chronically stressed, if you're like that stress case that I was 10 years ago, and you're making cortisol, cortisol, cortisol because you've got just too much stress and you're not managing it so skillfully like I was 10 years ago, then you will make cortisol above all else, and you won't make much of these other sex hormones. So this happened to me. I was making a lot of cortisol. It was blocking my progesterone receptor. I wasn't making much progesterone, which is very soothing. I wasn't making much DHEA or testosterone. Testosterone is the hormone of vitality and confidence and sex drive. Wasn't making that much estrogen. I've had variable amounts of estrogen over the course of my life. So that's kind of the schematic. It's the way that hormones are made in your adrenal glands. So let's move on now to cortisol and its main jobs. So cortisol has a lot of different jobs. I want to focus in on three main jobs. Number one, it raises blood sugar. It raises your blood glucose. And the idea here is if you're being chased by a tiger, if you're under chronic stress, you need glucose. You need fuel so that your muscles can run. And so it raises your blood glucose. And the problem, as I've mentioned, is that many of us run around as if a tiger is chasing us, raising our blood glucose when we don't actually need it. The other thing that cortisol does is it increases blood pressure. So that's good if you're trying to run, but if you're chronically stressed and your blood pressure is chronically elevated, it can cause other problems. It can make your heart beat too strongly. It can cause thickening of the blood vessels in your body and accelerate heart disease. And then third, a major job of cortisol is to modulate inflammation and the immune functioning in your body. And as with the other two, this can backfire where you can become overly inflamed. Your immune system can become overactive. It can lead to food allergies, for instance. I have an intolerance both to gluten and also to casein, which is the main protein found in milk. And this is related to that high cortisol that I had for many years until I figured out how to turn it around. The other problem is that this can interfere with wound healing. can also make you more likely to develop viruses when you get exposed to them. So when it comes to adrenal function, here are some of the reasons why your adrenals may become overly taxed, may become dysregulated. We've mentioned some of these already. I just wanted to consolidate it in one place. Lack of restorative sleep is a really important one. We've got a lot of moms who are on Mission Ignition, or even women that are in their 40s, 50s, and 60s who are not getting restorative sleep. And that's one of the things that we really want to be focused on and working on over the next 3 weeks. Nutrient poor food is another very important one. It kind of blows my mind how 90% of the food that is sold in the United States is processed food. It is nutrient poor, and that's one of the reasons last week I encouraged you to start adding nutrient-dense foods to your food plan. So this includes cereal. I'm not a big fan of having cereal for breakfast. I'm a big fan of having porridge that you make, and you can make this within a matter of minutes. I mentioned that I love quinoa flakes because you can make them really fast, and that's a gluten-free option. Also, reliance on stimulants when you're tired. So, as you may know, caffeine is the most common psychoactive substance in the world, and many of us rely on black tea, chai, coffee, all these other things to help us when we feel tired. And what I want instead is for you to shift toward natural stimulants, things that really help you with managing your cortisol that are not going to burn out your adrenal glands. Another harm to the adrenal glands is powerlessness. This can be in a job, in marriage, in your family of origin. And the idea is to shift your mental frame around powerlessness. Another problem, a hit to the adrenals, is constant drive, unrelenting drive, and perfectionism. Kind of related to powerlessness, sustain in a no-win situation, and also a lack of rejuvenating activities. So I've got a few ideas about rejuvenating activities for you today. And then here's a few examples. I mentioned already that I feel like we really lack protective factors. I think that's especially true for mothers in our culture today. An unhappy marriage can do this. And I may have mentioned I was in an unhappy marriage. I'm divorced and in my second marriage now, and an unhappy marriage can really harm your adrenal glands. I have not seen divorced women or single women who, single mothers who don't have some sort of issue related to their adrenal function. Stressful work conditions can also do this. Being self-employed, I think, puts you at an increased risk. It's a risk factor for a hit to the adrenals, especially if you're struggling or if it's new and you're figuring out all that you need to. Drug and alcohol abuse can do this, and I want you to really be honest about this particular issue because many people have what I would consider to be a sticky relationship with either drugs or alcohol. If you're someone who needs a glass of wine every single night, you may have a sticky relationship with alcohol. It may be that because your adrenals are taxed, you're really craving the sugar. It may be that you have a genetic predisposition. And one of the things I encourage you to do is to step away from the alcohol. I'm a big one for substitutions. And one of the things I really love to do is to have a tablespoon or 2 tablespoons of artisanal vinegar in my water. And I will drink that instead of a glass of wine. And if you can do that for 2 weeks, if you can give up alcohol for 2 weeks and it's no big deal, it's a diagnostic test that you are less likely to have alcoholism, you're less likely to have a sticky relationship. We know that 10% of the U.S. population is alcoholic, and I think it's important that you get really honest about whether this is a sticky area for you. And what I mean by drugs, I include caffeine here. I include marijuana. So just consider whether you might have a sticky relationship there. Shift work is another good example. We've got a number of nurses that are with us in Mission Ignition Energy. And nurses especially, I think, have an issue with this when they are changing the shifts that they work, more likely to harm the adrenals because you get out of that circadian rhythm that is essential for pretty much every hormone that you make. If you have questions about that, you can ask me about it for one of our Thursday sessions. And then finally, frequent crises. I know many of you are taking care of parents or loved ones who are sick, or maybe you've gone through some surgery. And it's often when you have one crisis after another that they can have synergy in terms of the hit that they have to your adrenal function. So what's normal when it comes to cortisol? I just want to mention some of the normal results that you might see depending on what kind of tests that you do. I mentioned that you can test your blood, your urine, and your saliva. When it comes to your blood, ideally in the morning, so this is between about 7 and 9 a.m., depending on when you get up, this is within ideally an hour of waking up, you should have a cortisol in the morning between 10 and 15 micrograms per deciliter. In the afternoon, it should be between 6 and 10. And ideally, you want a balance between your wear and tear hormones, including cortisol, versus your anabolic growth and repair hormones. And I'll dial this in a little bit further for you. I know it's hard to see this, but you can see an overview here of what's shown in the middle in the pink box is your catabolic or glucocorticosteroids, glucocorticoids. Glucocorticoids just means that they raise blood sugar. And these are basically the 17-hydroxy hormones that raise blood sugar, including cortisol. So these are the wear and tear hormones versus those that are shown on the right in the green box, which are your androgens, your anabolic growth and repair hormones. And what you want in the body, what you want in terms of metabolism, is a balance between the pink box and the green box. You want a nice balance between catabolism and anabolism. Not cannibalism, but catabolism, the wear and tear, versus anabolism, which is growth and repair. And this is measurable. I've got an example here of someone who's got too much wear and tear. So this woman has too much catabolism versus anabolism. So you want to have a good balance between the wear and tear and the growth and repair. This is totally measurable, but here's what I find most commonly in my practice, that there's too much catabolism, too much wear and tear versus the growth and repair. So I've got kind of an extreme slide here of what happens when your adrenals are making too much cortisol. I mentioned already that when your cortisol level is too high, when you're in the early to mid stress response, chronic stress response, it tends to deplete your feel-good brain chemicals and it can lead to emotional disturbance. It also can cause what's called moon facies. It makes your face more round. And this is basically something called hypercortisolism, too much cortisol. You can measure this in the blood and also in the urine. That's how conventional medicine types measure this. And this is a more extreme version of high cortisol, also known as Cushing syndrome. But the important point here is that I see a lot of women who don't have full-on Cushing syndrome, but they have some of these symptoms. They have some osteoporosis. They have high blood pressure. Maybe they don't have a buffalo hump, that little hump on the back, but they have some increased belly fat. You can have hyperplasia of your adrenal glands, and sometimes this is genetic. I just had a patient that I've been taking care of who's a chef who has what's called congenital adrenal hyperplasia. She makes too much cortisol in her adrenal glands, and it is the reason why she has, at age 50, increased hair loss. So it's worth checking this out. I mentioned last week that it's so important to measure the physical aspect of your energy, to look at the physical aspect first before you dive into the higher order solutions related to psychology and emotions and energy management. It's really important to attend to these physical aspects and to talk to your doctor about these things. You can also see thin, wrinkled skin. You can have stretch marks, kind of purple stripes on your belly. Sometimes you can stop having your period related to high cortisol because it blocks the progesterone receptor. It can also cause muscle weakness. We had one woman last week who said, you know, I do yoga 3 times a week. I go on a hike. It's not excessive, and yet I feel like I've run a marathon. And this is an example of muscle weakness that can happen when your cortisol level is high. You can also have these purple dots on your skin called purpura or skin ulcers. This is related to the poor wound healing. Remember, the 3 jobs of cortisol are, 1, to raise your blood glucose, 2, to modulate your blood pressure, and then 3, to modulate your immune functioning. And poor wound healing is one of the problems when your cortisol level is too high. So I want to shift now to some of these ideas about how to recover. And this is a slide from Dr. James Wilson's book, Adrenal Fatigue. I don't actually recommend that book, but I think this particular slide is worthwhile because it shows how when you're feeling depleted, when you're feeling like your energy is not very good, the way that most of us heal is not this linear progression toward feeling 100%, but rather you make some progress, you hit a plateau, you have some setbacks, maybe some more stressors get piled on your plate, and then you start this process again of making some progress, having a setback, maybe hitting a plateau, and so on. And so it's not that I'm looking for you to make continuous improvement here. I'm looking for overall gradual improvement, knowing that similar to when you fly from San Francisco to New York, or San Francisco to Rome, I think that's a better example, given that we're doing mission ignition energy and we're healing the adrenals. Not New York, but Rome. Siena, your flight to Siena. So what we know is that it's not a straight linear flight that you go on the plane, right? You're constantly tacking back and forth, a little bit north, a little bit south, a little bit west, a little bit east. And overall, you're going in one direction, but it's a lot of tacking back and forth, similar with adrenal repair. Now, Hans Selye is the father of stress, and I just want to talk about him for a moment because a lot of his work on stress was actually disproven later, and I just think it's important that we dial this in a little bit better. So let me tell you about that. I mentioned already that Walter Cannon was considered one of the first researchers on stress, and honestly, a lot of his work got ignored by the conventional medical community because they just didn't want to hear about stress. They didn't think it was so sexy or such an important topic. When Hans Selye graduated from medical school in 1935. He became a researcher at McGill University in Montreal, and he was a big fan of Walter Cannon. He wanted to follow on the heels of his work and to be a stress researcher. In the 1940s, stress finally started to get the attention that it deserved because the military in particular got very interested in stress and how to build resilient soldiers, both during and after World War II. And Selye really believed that the body had a non-specific response to any demand that was placed on it, and that consisted of a specific triad in response to stress. Here was the triad. 1, the adrenal glands became enlarged as they made more cortisol. 2, the immune system, the thymus, the spleen, and the lymph nodes shrunk. And then 3, the gastrointestinal tract got involved, and stress caused bleeding ulcers in the stomach and in the intestines. So Selye really believed that stress was physically triggered. He published 1,700 papers on stress and wrote 30 books. And he gave birth to the modern concept of stress management. Then in the 1970s, another guy came along who disproved a lot of Selye's work. This guy was named Mason, Dr. John Mason. And he really believed that the physiological theory of stress didn't work, but rather a psychological theory did. In other words, the stress response is mostly psychological. We get stressed because we're upset. Now, that doesn't make the cortisol story any less important, but it does point to a crucial difference in solutions. And that crucial difference is that we need to work with the mind and with our psychology when it comes to healing the physical components. Now, I'm just going to mention here, I'm going to come back to this point, but I'm going to talk about the cortisol to DHEA ratio. I'm going to talk about some of these physical components, and then I'll come back in to address this point about physiological versus psychological. So one of the issues as you get older is that your body makes more cortisol and less DHEA. So DHEA starts to decline in your 20s, and cortisol goes up as you get older. It's thought to be one of the reasons why sleep starts to erode. It's not really clear what's the chicken and what's the egg, but that's what we find. I mentioned last week that the cortisol to DHEA ratio is one of the easiest and most effective ways to track your adrenal function, and you can look at this especially in the 40s, which is where the cortisol to DHEA ratio goes down by on average 50%. You know already that DHEA is a precursor to testosterone. And what I find is that you want the ratio to be on the low side. You want to have a good balance between these two hormones, but with aging, the ratio rises. And with that upward shift associated with aging in cortisol and the downward shift in DHEA, most of us find that we have less physical and mental reserves to deal with the everyday challenges of life. It tends to make us more impatient and depleted. It is associated with a greater risk of depression. It can also erode your working memory. Dementia is much higher in people who have a higher cortisol to DHEA ratio compared to people who have a normal ratio. It also tends to make you crave sugar for solace. It also is associated with higher blood pressure and food allergies. You get sick more often when your ratio is higher with cold viruses and the flu. So let me shift now to a few other thoughts about this. I've got an example here from my latest results on my adrenal function. I just want to say a couple of things about this. So this test actually came out quite normal. This is one of the best 24-hour urine cortisol adrenal hormone results I've seen. And one quick note I want to make here, you can see that my DHEA is on the low side. It's that's shown at the top of this slide if you're on the webcast. And I'm in the yellow with my DHEA, but one important piece here is that DHEA is mostly, when you're measuring your level, you want to look at the salt of DHEA, which is DHEAS. DHEAS in the blood and in the urine is actually much more accurate than looking at pure DHEA, because DHEA gets converted into the salt about 90%+ of the time. I think it's 99%, but I can't remember exactly. So you can ignore my DHEA here. I know from my saliva and from my blood that my DHEA is just fine. And what I want you to focus on is the fact that my cortisol, as well as the next four metabolites, are all within the green, which is the normal range. So the way that these results are reported are the green are normal, the yellow is kind of a caution area, and the red is not so good. You can also see that my aldosterone, which controls salt, is normal. A lot of people who have adrenal fatigue start to have issues with their electrolytes. That's a really important thing to keep in mind. So I'm going to shift now to supplements. We're going to talk about supplements. I wanted to give you some practical things before I get back to this point about the myth of stress, the myth of the pure physiological component of stress. So here are some proven supplements. If you tend to have a high cortisol level, and I really encourage you over the course of Mission Ignition to measure your cortisol level. You can go to canaryclub.org and you can order the test yourself if your local doctor's not willing to order it. But if you know already that you tend toward high cortisol or low cortisol, here are the supplements that are most proven. I like to think about the Gottfried protocol, which is three different steps. The first step is nutrition, nutraceuticals, lifestyle. Second step is proven herbal therapies. Third step is bioidentical hormones. So I've divided that here for you. In terms of high cortisol, that includes vitamin B5, vitamin C, fish oil, L-theanine, and phosphatidylserine. All of these things have been shown to lower cortisol when it's too high. Now, should you take all of those? No. What I usually recommend is that you start with just one or two. Maybe you start with fish oil together with phosphatidylserine. Or take one of these proven botanicals like rhodiola or Panax ginseng. I'm a big fan of rhodiola. I take fish oil and rhodiola every day. I also take DHEA. I take about 5 milligrams a day. You need a small dose. You don't want to take the whopping dose that is on the shelves at the local health food store that is designed for men. Men usually take somewhere around 25 milligrams a day. For most women, if you start taking that much, it can cause hair loss. It can make you break out. It can increase the rogue hairs on your chin, and your neck. So you want to take a small dose of it, but that helps me with keeping my cortisol in the normal range. If you have low cortisol, the most proven supplements are licorice and isoquart. Isoquart is a plant form of cortisol. If you have more questions about this, you can ask me. I want to get back to this myth of stress where Hans Selye talked about stress as a physical process with a psychological component. And our latest thinking about stress is actually the reverse, which is that stress is a psychological process with a physical component. That's the way I think about it. And I want to share with you some of the spiritual teachers that I think have really nailed this well, one of whom is Byron Katie. Here's a quote from Byron Katie. I discovered that when I believed my thoughts, I suffered. But when I didn't believe them, I didn't suffer. And that this is true for every human being. This is a really important point that she makes. And she goes on to say, freedom is as simple as that. I found that suffering is optional. I found a joy within me that has never disappeared, not for a single moment. That joy is in everyone always. So she is talking here about the myth of stress. And she uses something called the work, which is a series of questions that you can ask yourself related to stresses that you feel. And I'm not going to take this on so much today because we're running out of time, but you can maybe write about this on Facebook, or you can ask me questions about it if you want to know more. I want to turn now to what repairs the adrenals. And the point I'm making here with stress is that the locus of control when it comes to stress and stress response is within you. It's not external. Some of the things that help are meditation and thought management. I'm going to give you some tips there. Another thing that helps is improving your relationships. That includes boundaries, trying to weed out the codependents, not overproviding, having clear and direct communication, managing your finances responsibly. When it comes to the physical component, that piece is still important, but I really feel like the psychology is maybe more important to address along with the physical. Both of them need time and your focus. And this includes optimizing sleep, nutrient-dense food, regular detoxification and elimination, which we're going to be talking about with Ellen Heed this week, using proven supplements, and moderate exercise, especially adaptive exercise. When it comes to managing thoughts, I'm going to go back again to Andy Weil. He talks about how in the Western paradigm, one of the most proven methods we have is cognitive behavioral therapy. And what I love is that in the Eastern paradigm, we have many more options, including the use of mantra, visualization, breath work, like that 4-7-8 I shared with you at the beginning, mindfulness, sound, and music. I want to give you a couple of tips here. This is especially for those of you who are adrenally challenged and you can't imagine adding another thing to your to-do list. We know that getting a massage lowers cortisol. This was proven in 2010. There's a favorite mantra that I have here. It's called the Let Go Mantra, and I'll post a little bit more about this mantra in our Facebook page. But just by listening to this mantra, you can significantly change your thought patterns. This is one of the ways of managing your thoughts. Here's the link, bit.ly/HHD Llama. Orgasmic meditation is another way to affect your cortisol levels. We've been talking on Facebook about using a labyrinth, which I really love. Laughing and music also help to modulate cortisol. And then I've mentioned before that I really see sleep as a spiritual path. And for those of you who have specific sleep questions, please ask me. Send me an email, missionignition@sarahgottfriedmd.com. I'll talk a little bit more about it on Thursday. And I love this quote. This is about meditation. You should sit in meditation for 20 minutes every day unless you're too busy. Then you should sit for an hour. I think that really kind of nails it. I'm not saying you must add an hour each day of meditation. I think you could start with 5 minutes, but this is one of those places where frequency and consistency matters a lot more than duration. I have a meditation about smiling into your adrenals that I'm going to share with you on Facebook, and we'll add it to the recording page because I'm running out of time today to share this with you. And this is inspired by Montauk Chia, which is one of my favorite Taoist teachers. So it's a practice to smile into your adrenal glands. And just a reminder in terms of schedule this week, on Wednesday at 5 p.m., we've got part one of the interview with Ellen Heed, 5 p.m. Pacific. We've got our Q&A on Thursday at noon, our usual time, and then on Saturday you'll hear part two of our session with Ellen Heed. You'll hear part three next week. And I just want to finish with the intention that you address both the psychological and the physical components of stress, but I think it's really important that we look at these psychological pieces once you have assessed where you are with the physical. So we want to hold the space for both. So I hope you enjoyed this ride through Adrenals 101. So happy to be with you today. And we will keep doing our adrenal repair. All right, everyone. Thanks for your attention, and I will talk to you very soon. This is Dr. Sarah Gottfried signing out. Bye now.